This is Radio Zapatista Chiapas No Se Olvida, and we're here broadcasting live back from our studios in Berkeley, La Otra Califas, desde abajo y a la izquierda. As always, we're bringing it to you from below and to the left. We have a space that's dedicated to the Zapatista struggle in Chiapas and like-minded struggles around the world and around Mexico. I'm Daniel, and in the studio with me tonight are Jesse, Victoria, and Tyler. Buenas noches. And we got Pedro Reyes on the ones and twos, keeping us connected to the airwaves. Tonight's show is going to be about land and autonomy. We're going to be talking about the ways that political struggles that try to create new forms of doing politics, autonomous struggles like the struggle of the Zapatistas, are rooted in the places that they come out of, are rooted in the land. And these are the dual themes that we're going to be coming back to throughout the night as we talk about Chiapas, Oaxaca, and here in the Bay Area, San Francisco, the Alemany Farms. So without further ado, let's get right to it.
News from Oaxaca. 2 years ago tomorrow,
June 14th, 2006,
there was repression against the teacher strike in Oaxaca. Tomorrow there will be another mega marcha that's going to be denouncing this repression, and they're marching against, in their own words, marching against tyranny and fascism. Some of their demands: first, punish those guilty of the repression. Not only the repression that happened 2 years ago, but the repression that's been going on in the last 2 years, people being disappeared, people being assassinated, and no one or hardly anybody being held accountable. One example is the two Triqui indigenous women that were killed a couple months ago, and to this day, no one has been held accountable for that.
It's also noticeable that those women were alternative media people. They did they were indigenous people who worked with forms of alternative media that got the word out about what kinds of stuff were going on and sort of these campaigns of repression. And I think it's important to point that out because the alternative media played a really big role in the Oaxaca uprising in 2006, and that was one of the things that we actually, as a collective, the Radio Zapatista Collective, got inspired by, the sort of immense production of alternative forms of knowledge and people talking about what they were seeing, you know, from the ground all over, through the radio, through pirate radio, through community, you know, publications and stuff like that.
Exactly. And so nobody's being held accountable for these murders, but people within the movement are going to jail. So this, one of the second demands of the Mega Marcha tomorrow is to free all political prisoners. Recently, or last week, Jaciel Cruz, an 18-year-old who was charged of murdering one of the government employees, was in jail for over a year and was released this week. But there are still many more. The second demand, free political prisoners. And the third is to get the governor, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz, out of Oaxaca. And actually, the sort of mainstream teachers union had an agreement. They decided that the strike is over for this year. But Section 22, which has been the most radical section in Oaxaca, has decided to stay on strike until tomorrow, and demanding that Ulises Ruiz steps down.
The strikes, actually, I think it's really interesting, I mean, to talk about that, because that's sort of where the repression happened. On the anniversary or almost anniversary of the 2 year anniversary of the repression, it's important to remember exactly sort of what happened on June 14th, 2006. And I think, there's this teacher strike that goes on every year. The teachers in Oaxaca go on strike in order to get a pay raise. And this happens all the time. I think 2 years ago was the 25th strike that they'd done. So, you know, this has been going on for a really long time. And usually the governor sort of sits down with them and says, okay, you can, you know, here's your pay raise, a small pay raise just to keep them, you know, dependent or whatever. But what happened 2 years ago was that instead of that, he sent in the police and they, you know, attacked this this encampment of thousands of teachers who were camped out in the Zócalo. And so it's really important to remember that these same teachers who are part of the same union are, you know, sticking it out. They're doing the exact same strike that they were doing 2 years ago, but this Section 22 is sticking with it a little bit more to show that they're still the radicalized part of the union.
And moving on to news in Chiapas. On June 4th, military activity, both federal, state, and local police and military, about 200 of them went into Zapatista communities with trucks full of equipment, full of soldiers, and police tanks also going into the communities. They threatened the community, but at the two communities that they approached, the people from those communities came out with machetes, came out with whatever they had, and told them to go away. The police responded, and the military responded by saying, "We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we're not leaving next time." And this is just another example of the increased repression that's been happening in Mexico, especially since Calderón has been in office, and under the guise of the war on drugs. So one of the excuses to justify this recent paramilitary activity was that there was drugs being grown on Zapatista territory and in the communities, and they've been using this sort of excuse for a number of years now, and it's not real. There hasn't been any evidence that the Zapatistas are growing marijuana on, but it's just a strategy.
Yeah, I mean, the Zapatista communities are completely dry. Not only do they not grow marijuana, obviously, but they also don't consume drugs. They don't have alcohol there. They're completely dry. It's absolutely absurd that the government would use that, but it makes sense as an excuse, as a justification for all this stuff, because it fits into, like you said, Calderón or Fecal, like we like to call him here, it fits into his strategy for framing the war on social movements as a part of the war on instability, quote-unquote instability. You know, you see newspaper reports about how there's this sort of ongoing conflict that's very bloody and violent with the drug traffickers that's going on between the army and and these drug traffickers who have massive firepower. And this sort of discourse allows the government to fit the Zapatistas into that same struggle. So what we're seeing, and I think it's also important to point out that what we've seen in the past, like you said, it tended to be paramilitary action against Zapatista communities. This is actually not only the military, but also the police and the attorney general's office. So we're seeing an escalation of the federal government, the government sort of levels that are involved in the direct confrontation of Zapatista communities.
Exactly. And one of the requests from the Juntas de Buen Gobierno is that internationally, nationally, locally, everybody stay on alert. And a lot of different collectives have been responding with their own communiques saying, we are aware of this repression that happened on June 4th, and we are paying attention.
Because they're going to supposedly come back in 15 days. So that's June 19th, I guess.
In today's segment, we're talking about land. We see the obvious collection between the Mexican government always trying to take away the Zapatista land. And next on the show, we're talking about Alemany Farms, which is also another land issue here locally.
Let's take a quick musical break, and we'll come back and talk about Alemany Farms.
It's more than your right to assist. Refuse to the government admits. Take a risk. Raise your fist. Unite people, army, enlist. Rebel music transmit like this. Proving that the movement exists. Realize you're the catalyst. Refuse. FBI. On the cross the line. Cross the line. Respect is fine. Respect is fine. Crying fell. Tomahawks. Force the sky. Force the sky. White collar crime. White collar crime. Immortalize yourself. Care for what you rep. Of the new left. The new left. Only a few left. Equal employer, I'm higher app. Read between the lines. Redefine.
to feel about his shoes. Know your God, the con is on if you're confused. Resist. Are you an actor or an activist?
As Jesse said, remember the dual themes of tonight's show, land and autonomy. So we've been talking about how in Zapatista communities, the Zapatista communities have been able to sort of organize to defend their land, you know, with machetes, with slingshots, with just people being there and sort of moral outrage against the incursions of the federal government, the state government, with the army, the police at different levels, and the attorney general's office who are trying to get them out of their land with this bogus excuse about drugs. In San Francisco, we're sort of making a little bit of a leap, but this is the same, I think, fundamental issue, the connection between autonomous organizing and political movements that try to create other ways of engaging with the community in political manners, and the relationship between those kinds of political movements and the land. And so what this next segment that we're going to listen to has to do with is an urban garden in southern San Francisco, the Alemany community. And we're going to hear a little bit about what these what this organization is trying to do with this garden.
The slogan Tierra y Libertad, or Land and Freedom, was popularized during the Mexican Revolution by indigenous leader Emiliano Zapata. And these interrelated issues continue to form the basis of Zapatista claims to autonomy in Chiapas today. But land and freedom remain fundamental to grassroots and community-based activism from below and to the left, even here in the Bay Area.
Talking about low-income communities and this concept of food deserts where we find in the middle of the Central Valley, you know, nothing healthy for farm worker communities to eat. Or in the middle of the ghetto, there's no grocery stores, there's just liquor stores.
Alemany Farm is an urban agriculture project located in San Francisco's low-income Alemany community. Antonio Roman Alcala, one of the farm's organizers, spoke to us about the farm's mission.
I still have experiences where we're working with these youth apprentices who are about 12 to 18 years old, about 10 of them at a time. They get paid $50 a week to do 6 hours of work, and they're, you know, getting trained, and they get lectures on, like, this is what this is all about, you know, organic amendments, or here's what drip, how do you install drip tape. And I still have times where I'll be eating, you know, spinach straight from a vet, and they're like, what? You know, they're just, the idea of eating food directly from the garden is still completely foreign to them, and they still kind of can't imagine food that's not processed. All we can really do is create this space for them to experience something different.
In the 80s and early 90s, the land now being cultivated at the Alemany Housing Project, just another site of environmental injustice in the Bay Area, was used as a dump for unwieldy and at times toxic refuse like refrigerators, until an organization called the San Francisco League of Urban Gardeners, or SLUG, came in, cleaned it up, and turned it into a productive space for agriculture. But SLUG brought with it certain organizational problems.
SLUG then ran this program as mostly job training program because they were involved with the Alemany community. The Alemany community assumed that they were going to be getting a lot of the jobs out of this. You know, they're right next door. It seemed to make sense. But then for one reason or another, SLUG actually was hiring a lot of the folks from the Bayview and from other districts. So Alemany was told us that they felt pretty dissed by SLUG. You know, it was a very top-down kind of management. This executive director who kind of just decided everything, spent all sorts of money and all sorts of unnecessary things. And ultimately, you know, we had things like we took out a bunch of landscaping fabric from underneath the orchards, which was obviously done as a busy work option because there's no reason why you would put landscape fabric under an orchard if you wanted healthy trees. So there's things that they did that obviously were not for the best of the community and for the best of the farm. They're done kind of on your typical nonprofit industrial complex level where they're like, well, we're going to get a bunch of grants so that we can maintain this organization. They had some financial issues where they're operating under contracts and paying large amounts of money to different services they got, expecting to be repaid by the city, and the city completely defunded them at a certain point. The nail in the coffin was when some workers in a kind of jail to work program operated through SLUG were told by their supervisors that they had to vote for and campaign for Gavin Newsom. So that was kind of the end of SLUG, and the entire program collapsed, and the space was effectively abandoned for a couple of years.
Moving past Slug's top-down, disconnected model, Alemany Farm has actively tried to engage the community in horizontal ways, and by doing so, provide services that are actually useful, in addition to bringing its mission of sustainable and affordable produce. Part of that usefulness entails incorporating this mission into an alternative site of teaching and learning, providing as much as possible jobs and job training for local youth.
So it was in 2005 that myself and a couple friends decided that we were looking for somewhere to kind of work on an urban farming type project together. Through that, the three of us just started getting a lot more people involved from our circle of friends, as well as, you know, I made a flyer and we walked around in Alemany and asked people, you know, what is it that this space means to you? Like, what do you use it? What would you like to see there? And, you know, there's a couple kids told us they want to see more basketball courts, but for the most part, what people told us is that they wanted jobs. No one said, I want to grow organic carrots. I want to, you know, like, no one was talking about healthy food. What people were talking about was the need for jobs, especially for the youth. So, you know, we knew that three of us could not provide that. But we knew that, you know, for this project to exist and for it to work, that we really had to think about and really deal with the needs of the Alemany community, because it's right there. It's an essential part of that space. So, you know, with that in mind, we actively sought out leadership in Alemany to see how we can develop programs there to really create this resource that the community was asking for. We ended up finding a woman named Alice Carruthers and the Alemany Resident Management Corporation, which is effectively the tenants association. And she's a like really passionate neighborhood activist, grew up there, lived there for 30 years. Through that, we, you know, had this whole process of meeting and deciding what our vision was and what kind of programs we wanted to have there. And we created this document, which then ended up getting in the hands of Tom Yano, the District 9 supervisor, and he was just super supportive of it. We didn't, you know, expressly go asking for money, but he expressed that he wanted to help. So that was the first money that we had ever gotten as a program. We ran purely volunteer for 2 years, from 2005 to 2007.
Working with the community has been complicated, but Antonio points out how such collaborative partnerships are critical in a sustainable approach to grassroots efforts for social, economic, and environmental justice. In other words, it's not only the farm and the vegetables it grows, but also the community bonds the farm helps fertilize, that will ideally prove sustainable.
Ever since the beginning, I mean, the only folks in Alemany who are really consistently involved are these kids, and so they vary from, you know, as young as 3 years old to about 12, is the oldest kid, and maybe the younger kids, they're just wild, and they just, sometimes they would come and they would help. And other times, you know, it's you. Child care is a full attention activity. It's not like you can really get farm work done. So I think our relationship with kids was not very consistent. So what we had was, you know, these kids who appreciated us sometimes and then sometimes thought we were just like these intrusive, you know, outsiders who were doing this thing. What do I care about that? This is my backyard. So we definitely had some vandalism issues the first couple of years, with plants being ripped out or just kicked, that sort of stuff. And, you know, I would try to have talks with some of the kids, and they'd deny it, and it'd be obvious that they did it. You know, I'm like trying to be these kids' friends, not another authority figure, because, you know, I mean, in my mind, that's the only place they have control in their lives. And so it was really hard to try to figure out how to approach catering to their needs as well as the needs of the farm. And the solution ended up being that when the youth program started, because it is a community, because there are these connections, you know, some of those kids are older cousins, some of them are brothers, they know each other. And when these older kids have this investment in the farm, or they planted those tomato plants, or they, you know, made that trellis, now all of a sudden, if a younger kid is deciding to do vandalism, they're going to get smackdown, you know, by some of these older kids, or they're going to get, you know, at least a stern talking to. So there's a reinforcement mechanism now that didn't exist before, purely because of the amount of investment we have from someone in the community. And so since the youth program started, we basically have no vandalism at all. We're not trying to, you know, go into the community and tell people to eat organic food. We're actually having the youth workers go out and ask the elderly members of the community, well, who here would want food if it was offered to them? And then, you know, we create a database of actual housing, individual households that want collards once a week or want some lettuce. And then we actually have a free drop-off for seniors. If they're going to use the food, that's the kind of the noblest goal of the project, is to actually have healthy food be eaten by people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford it.
If you want to get more involved, Almany Farm accepts volunteers for their community work days. Check their website, almanyfarm.org, for more information.
Face on, but deep down I know you wish they wasn't playing that low potion. Got you going through the motions, full of golf, fumbling the ball to where the players at. Junior varsity's no match for the big son. Champion the car, stop stressing that division. Titles are petty and already you display traits of greatness. Take this vote of confidence as a catalyst for armament. The strongest men win, packing the consciousness, the self-worth. Developing personally to see the purpose is more than letters on a shirt. No screen revolutionaries are come and go. I've seen visionaries, most of them known by name. Some came just to walk through, but if you wanna be a Tupac too, son, I got you, got you. Hey yo, step to the side when that. Hey yo, push from behind. It's a long road to travel, take time to look around. Slip aboard the water, but still manage to drown. But something tells me that it's a reason to believe in these kids. I feel a leader's hearing on this. Don't be afraid to raise your fist like this. But you all about the real talk, so provoked. Now it's exposed when you peel a bark back. Hard is the shell for the skeleton. When the mind bends, it grinds bones into gelatin.
In keeping with the topic of Almany Farms, we saw a theme of community learning, of collective learning, what with the people sharing skills around food production and tilling the soil and whatnot. Well, we want to kind of switch gears a little bit, but still keep it within the realm of collective learning. A couple weeks ago, it was announced that Dr. Manolo Callahan would not be reappointed for a sixth year at Humboldt State University.
And the reason is because, well, you know, there's multiple reasons that are given officially, but theoretically, that, you know, what it seems to us is that he's too activist. He's been involved in too much activism on campus.
Right. Dr. Callahan is a founding member of Acción Zapatista de Austin, as well as Acción Zapatista de Humboldt. He is the catalyst of the Ethnic Studies Department being established at Humboldt State University. He is essentially the backbone of the Ethnic Studies Department at Humboldt State University. And you may be asking yourselves, why is it important? Why should we care that an Ethnic Studies professor at Humboldt State University in Northern California not be reappointed for a sixth year? Well, it is quite simply because this is just one case in a larger war against critical thinking in communities of color, or more than that, not just critical thinking, but people of color asserting their own knowledge and the production of their own knowledge from within their own communities. We're seeing this in Michigan with Andrea Smith being denied tenure. We're seeing this recently with the dismissal of Karen Salazar in Watts, who was a high school teacher at Jordan, who was dismissed for teaching Malcolm X in class and other politically and culturally relevant curriculum to that community. We're also seeing it with the Senate bill in Arizona, 1108, which effectively tries to disband such groups as Mecha, disbands Raza Studies. So the case of Manolo Callahan is interesting because it's just one instance of this repression that is going on statewide. We're mentioning it today because in our next show we are going to have a whole segment regarding this, and not only on the attacks of people of color knowledge and people of color asserting their intellectual authority within the institution, but also really exploring what kind of autonomous learning spaces can go on outside of that.
So stay tuned for our next show. We're going to be working on these documentaries over the course of the next couple weeks and broadcasting them on the next couple Radio Zapatista segments.
To finish up the show, we have just a couple announcements for you all. The first one is going to be held at the Intertribal Friendship House. It's going to be happening Saturday, June 14th at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's going to be a permaculture project. So come out to Saturday to meet folks to help beautify the Intertribal Friendship House. If you can't make it, donations of garden tools, seeds, and supplies are welcome. The other announcement is there's been a lot of debates around the San Francisco budget cuts to poor folks, or specifically houseless and homeless folks. So the location of this event is at the SF City Hall, room 250. It's Thursday, June 19th at 5 o'clock p.m. And that's it.
This has been Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida. Thanks for tuning in. You can check our website. That's radiozapatista.org. We have all the audios, all the shows we do. They're all uploaded there. You can download them, listen to them on the internet. And you can also send us an email at radiozapatista@gmail.com. We're really interested in any comments that you may have. Also, we just want to give a shout-out to La Naranjita. Thanks to this collective space on KPFA 94.1. And that's it. That's the show.